Hi, I'm Ken. I'm an alcoholic. Don't have to worry about screwing anything up. Well, it's good to be here. I enjoyed all the speakers up to now. And I don't know what the Al-Anon speaker said this afternoon, but everybody got up and left at the same time. But it was just that kind of a day, you know? I want to thank Fred and Martha. I'll say F and M. I don't want to say M and F backwards. So it's nice to thank Fred and Martha for inviting me down here and all the ad hoc committee. Thank you very much. And John for picking me up. John never got credit for that. Thank you, John. That was great. He was going to have a big book, which he didn't have. But anyway, I look for the big book. Go to the light, children, you know. You know? But I'm really, really glad to be here. You folks may not have known this because it just happened in the last few weeks, but they now have a definite test which will allow us to tell the problem drinker from the alcoholic from the social drinker. It's a latest scientific thing, and I'll explain it to you so that you will know how to perform this test if you want to, and it's 100% accurate. You go into a bar and you take a fly and you put it in every whiskey glass. The social drinker will pick up the glass, see the fly, and call the bartender and say, "When you have time, can you replace this with a fresh drink?" You know who he is right away. The problem drinker will see the fly in the glass, he will take the fly out and down the drink. The alcoholic is very easy to pick out. He's at the end of the bar, and there's this loud noise as he has the fly by the back of the neck yelling, "Spit it out! Spit it out!" And, you know. So. And they tell me it's 100% accurate. It's really great to be here, and, you know, I am like the token uneducated person they have at every convention, you know. I got through school totally unscarred by education. I tell you that up front so when you discover it halfway into my talk, it won't come as a surprise to either of us, you know? But they always have me with people who are lawyers and doctors and school teachers and psychologists and then Ken, you know? You know, Ken is for the real alcoholic, you know? You know? We all know Ken, you know? And I am a real alcoholic. I never wear orange, you know. You'll never see me in anything orange. And then you'll know right away he's a real alcoholic. And I hang out with guys who are totally unscarred by education also. Because I like to seek companions I can relate to. And, you know, they are the kind of guys who see life pretty much the way I do. You know, they are totally unscarred. And they come up with such great things. Like a guy says, like, "How come there's a light on the vacuum cleaner?" And the other guy said, "Don't be so stupid in case the power goes off." You know, like, these are the, you know, these are the guys I hang out with. Last week a guy said to me, "Ken, who was Michelangelo?" I said, "Where'd you hear that name?" He said, "I read it in a book." I said, "He painted the Sistine Chapel." He said, "Well, who the hell painted the other 15? You know, like, that's the, you know, those guys, you know. You know, the hamster's dead, but the wheel is still turning, you know, like. No, that's, you know, these are the kind of guys you look right into their eyes and see out the back of their heads, you know, and they're all sober, and you know, and it's when they're being most serious that they're most humorous. You know, some people go out of their way to tell jokes, and these guys don't. They are the joke, you know, they are the joke. A guy was reading something, he says, "Ken, did you read about this Unabomber?" I said, "No." He said he lived in a cabin in Colorado for 20 years. He had no electricity, had no running water. I'm surprised he didn't go crazy. Yeah, just, it'll be better in the morning, you know? But these are the guys I hang out with, and they, and as I say, they stay sober. You know, and we do, you know, Alcoholics Anonymous, I don't know how you folks define it, but to me it's a spiritual program. And we're spiritual beings in a spiritual program. And I like to take that word spiritual and look at it, write it down. I have the newcomers write it down all the time. And then when we look at it, I say, notice there's a word inside that word. Inside the word spiritual is the word ritual. And that's what Alcoholics Anonymous is. It's the ritual. We go to meetings, we work with others, you know, we do certain rituals. And the nice part about Alcoholics Anonymous is it doesn't make any difference what's going on, you get to do the same thing. You know, in life there seems to be like periods of consolation and periods of desolation. In consolation, it seems like everything's coming your way, you know. He or she is behaving properly, you know, economy is good, everything's, it just seems like the tide is coming in. And then there's periods of desolation, where it seems like everything is going away from you. And, you know, you want to run after it and catch up, and it's, you can't run fast enough, you know. And the nice thing about it is that in times of consolation, we do the ritual. In times of desolation, we do the ritual. It doesn't make any difference. The marvelous part about Alcoholics Anonymous to me is you get to do the ritual all the time. And as long as you're doing the ritual, it seems like the spiritual just comes along with it. You know, if you're doing the right things, you know, the right thing seems to happen. Now, I don't know what the right thing is, but it seems to happen. You know, people are so busy trying to figure this thing out, they could be taking an action to get out. And you got to be careful of who you talk to, particularly old timers. You know, some of them are they need a little bit more nurturing to be kind, you know, because sometimes they jump in with a newcomer and they, you know, it's like you wonder, where did he come from with that? You know, like a newcomer shared, he was in a jacuzzi and he was surrounded by 5 nude women and he had all the booze that he could possibly want. And the old timer says to him, hey, you're an AA now. You'll never have to go through that again. Thank God that's behind you. You know, we're going to give you a big book. You know, you can read how it works. Yeah. So you have to be real careful of those old timers because, you know, like, you know, the lights are on, but sometimes there's nobody home, you know, it's like and they mean well, and that's the nice part about it. And with Alcoholics Anonymous, you get to see things from like all different perceptions. I don't know about you guys, but the nice part about being sober for me is I don't have boundaries. I hear people say, I have boundaries. I have no boundaries. You know, I tell life, come and get me. Come on. Come and get me. And everything I see is alcohol related. I don't care what it is. I hear people today talking about all kinds of things at meetings, and they think it's something else. But what it is untreated alcoholism. And if they were doing the ritual, 99% of what they're talking about would dissipate. It would go away. It would drop away because they'd be doing the program. Instead, they want to make up other things. They want to be running around, you know, like changing deck chairs on the Titanic. You know, well, let me sit over here. There's a better view, you know. Baby, you are going down, you know. The whole thing is going down. You know, like, we scratch stuff that don't itch. You know, like, well, that's just who we are, you know. With, yeah, that's not itching, you know. You know, but that's, and the nice part about it is that if you just stuck with the ritual, things would work out. You know, and you can always tell alcoholics because they think a lot, you know. And alcoholic thinking is about as useless as hubcaps on a tractor. You know, it's like...
So what do you know? I'm thinking about it.
Pace yourself. You got the whole day, you know, like, you know, like, take it easy, you know. And the nice part about this is that everything relates to AA. No matter what's going on, it's Alcohol Anonymous. I don't know what goes on. I sit out there and I was looking up here. Now, again, I'm unscarred by education, so that means I don't have any, you know. And the nice part about not having any is I don't have a vested interest in anything, you know. Most of the guys I hung out with think that Moby Dick is a venereal disease. You know, like, they, you know, they, you know, like, they, you know, they don't know. But when I sit out there and I get to look up here, you know, I inhale places. I don't go into a room. I inhale the room. I used to run numbers. It was a long time ago. And when you were on a block, you had to know who belonged on that block and who didn't belong on that block. Because if somebody was on that block who didn't belong on that block, chances are you wouldn't be on that block tomorrow. You know, you'd be wearing orange. That's why it's not my favorite color. So the deal is that you get to connect everything to Alcoholics Anonymous. I was sitting down there. Now, I don't know what the young lady, because someone mentioned there was a young lady who put up the three butterflies. I have no idea what she meant when she put them up there. But when I was sitting there, again now, I'm not a biologist or one of those guys who understands anything. So you have to get inside my head. And let me tell you, there's room. You know? But what I saw sitting out there were the three butterflies, okay? And I thought of the ABCs of Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, that I was alcoholic and my life was unmanageable, you know, that no human power could have restored me to sanity, you know, like, ooh, ooh, but God could and would if he was sought. You know, the caterpillar right at the end says, oh, geez, this is the end. He doesn't know he's going to be a butterfly yet. He's just hanging out, oh, geez, you know. And you know where they keep their nose? Right on the ground. I mean, you know, you're just hopping along. You know, everything in life is a speed bump, you know? You know? It's like, and then all of a sudden, boom, you're a butterfly. Now, I looked at the body of that butterfly. Now, remember, I'm not a biologist, but I saw four things that came out from the body. And those four things, there were two in each side of those things, and there's four in each of them. And I said, oh, they're the traditions. They're the traditions. They hold up something. Now, what do they hold up? The four things I thought they held up were the wings. They look like a double wing deal on each of those butterflies. Looks like two on each side to me. Looks like four of them, 12 of them. So I said, oh, these things are the traditions. And they hold up the wings that hold up the steps, which are the program, which allows this little butterfly to get around. You know? And so he thought it was the end. It was the beginning. It's like any newcomer. And this is the end. No, it's the beginning. And, you know, and then all of a sudden you're flying. And then he has this little antennae. I don't know what you call them. They come out, they go, ee, ee, like that. And I thought, every day he stood at the turning point. You know? And if he just keeps going straight with those traditions and those steps, he's going to have a smooth flight. You know, you show me a big book that's beat up and marked up, I'll show you probably it's being held by a man who isn't. You know? And the deal is that if you're an alcoholic and you're not in an AA meeting, you're homeless. You don't get to come home till you come here. And now it's hard to tell that to newcomers because they're so busy thinking. You know? How did you get here? The highway patrol pulled me over. Gave me a ticket. In the old times, here, you had a spiritual experience. God intervened in your life and did something for you couldn't do for yourself, and now you're in AA. That's not the way I see it. It didn't seem like a spiritual experience. Cost me $4,000 in my license, you know. And she left, you know. You know. And if you're an alcoholic, you know, I don't know, has the Macarena been through here yet? You know, has it been through, you know, daytime? I don't know. I don't know. I was to Naples last year. I thought you had to be 100 to live there. You know. So I don't know what catches on here, you know. But there's the alcoholic Macarena. Now, the alcoholic Macarena goes like this. It goes, put your hands on the roof, now behind your head, now behind your back, you know, and you know, and you see, what you guys doing now is the best thing for me, laughter. I love to hear laughter. Cliff mentioned it last night. You know, if you're laughing, I know a couple of things about laughter that most people don't know. First of all, you cannot laugh and think at the same time. So for most people, it's a respite. You know, like, oh, whew, getting a little break here. Whew, whew. Thank you, baby. You know, thank you for the intermission, you know. And the other thing is that it's the closest thing most of us are going to get to meditation. Because when you are laughing, you're not thinking, there's no ego, and you're right in the moment. It's just like sex. If you do it right, it can be the same thing. Oh, yeah, you guys didn't know that. Oh, yeah. Yeah, 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 you know, and that's why, you know, but you got to do it right, you know. So you have to say to somebody, hey, this may look like something else, but it's really a meditational deal, you know. And I don't know about you guys, but I hear things differently. You know, somebody says something, I hear it very differently. I went on a Buddhist retreat, and the Buddhist guy said, I found out now, but at the time, he said, when you have orgasm, he said, you are the closest to God you're going to be. In most cases, because you are totally out of yourself, your concern is about another person, there's no ego, and you're totally in the moment. He says, and if you can sustain orgasm, you can stay closer to God. Now, what I heard is... if I can sustain orgasm for a half hour, I am God. You know, that's what I heard. And for those of you who are interested, I'm only 29 minutes and 57 seconds away. You know, like... but there's a lot of growth left in here, I'll tell you that. But the deal is that's why we gotta laugh, because you can't take this life serious. This is a cosmic joke. You know, God is playing to an audience that's too afraid to laugh. And when you laugh, that's the first sign of relief. And that's when you know, it can't be that bad, other people. And you might as well laugh at you because everybody else is. You know, like, you might as well at least be part of the scheme, you know? And it's like, it's not about thinking, you know? We don't have a chapter in this book into thinking. You know, these guys knew what they were doing. They wrote everything in a paradox. And the reason they did that is they knew the minds they were working with. You know? Alcoholics have, you know, if there was a logo here, it would be excess is not enough. You know, and these guys knew this, you know, they realize that they're not going to be dealing with the brightest bulbs in the room, you know, they just kind of know that. So that's the way they wrote the book. You can go to a library today or a bookstore and you can find more literature about our program. It's amazing. There's rows and rows and rows and rows of it. And when these guys wrote the book, they summed it up real simple. They said, when the alcoholic drinks, something happens. Now, is that detailed or what? You know, is that... I mean, that kind of sums it up, you know? So what happens when I drink? Something. What is it? If you're an alcoholic, you'll soon know, you know? You know? And that's how we are. It's so simple that we walk by it. You know, alcoholics are looking for what they have already. It's an amazing process that goes on here. You know, I see people... 2,000 years ago, there was a guy who said... He said, if you want to find the kingdom of God, it's within. Alcoholics thought he was trying to mislead us. Hey, he said within, I know it's without, you know. So we spent our whole life running after stuff, you know. And it's like, we can't catch it, because there's nothing to catch. We already got what we need. And when you go within, that's why, you know, here the secret is paradoxical. The way out is the way in. And as you go in, you get out. As you go in, you begin to develop the things that you already have, which you don't know you have, which are intuition, inspiration. You know, when we get up in the morning, what does it say we pray for? We pray for inspiration, intuitive thinking, decision. We don't pray for, give me some real big thoughts, you know? You know? Hubcaps on a tractor, you know? You don't want to give an alcoholic a big thought, you know? He usually gets indicted, you know? It's like, you know, like... You want to keep them free of big thoughts. You want to give them minimal task. You know, you want to keep them away from words and get them into actions. You know, I don't know what this is. Good, do this. You know, that's the way we work with guys. And the deal out is that as you move in, you get the answer that's there all along. You know, somebody said about the other day at a meeting, he said, insights. I need insights. No, you just need one insight. It's singular. And as soon as you get that insight, you have the answer. And the answer is, very simply... There is no moment more precious than this moment. This is the most precious moment there is. The past is a memory. The future is an imagination. This is the most important moment there is. And you have to be present to win. You know? If you're not where you're at, you're nowhere. You know, newcomers have trouble with this. You know? You've got to be present to win. I'm here. No, you're not here. You aren't even close. You aren't even in commuting distance yet, you know? But you're getting there, you know? But that's the way it is. You got to be present to win. And you listen to most people when they're sharing and they're having problems. What is it about? Something that's already happened or something that will happen. It's not about what's going on right now. It's always about some other time. And once you get to that insight, you find out there is no other time. You know, in the old ancient Greek, the word God stood for that which is. G-O-D, that which is. And if you read our literature, you can read any spiritual book you want, and it will eventually be summed up in Alcoholics Anonymous in a sentence or two. And that which is, and we have it in our book, which says, there is one who has all power. That one is God. When do you find him? Ah, you guys are... We on a roll now, Mom. Jump in a yimini. Put the pedal to the metal. And if you take the word now, N-O-W, and you spell it backwards, it's W-O-N, won. When you've learned to live in the now, you've won. Go home. You're a winner. You know, and that way you don't say, well, suppose I lose my job. Same guy with the Unabomber. Who cares? Who cares what happens? It doesn't matter what happens. Once you know, it doesn't matter. I love this because I have no idea where I'm going either. Some of this stuff I'm hearing for the first time myself. I have to stop and think about what I just said because I've heard it too. Like, I love the canned speech. I wish I had a canned speech. I show up, I have no idea where I'm going. I don't even know how I got here. That was the story of my life. I'd be in front of a judge and he'd say, why did you do it? I'd say, where am I? I was on a subway. I was heading to New York and my brother handed me a beer. And now I'm here in Kings County. How did that happen? I never knew. But I didn't know I didn't know. Because I hang out with people who didn't know and they reinforce the fact that I didn't know by the fact they didn't know. And so nobody knew. Then I came to Alcoholics Anonymous and my sponsor says, you don't have to know. I was trying to figure it out. He was trying to figure it in. It's like it moves quickly. It moves quickly. And the nice part about it is that you can stand still and catch up with it. It's only when you try to move with it. If you stand stationary, it just keeps going around. It's like character defects. They come up, boom, hit you in the face. You work on them for 2 years. Then they go away. 10 years later, they, boom, come up, hit you in the face again. You didn't know they went to the back of the line. They worked their way forward again. You were watching Lust. Oh, something else came in. Yeah. And you get to talk funny after a while because you start talking like an old-timer and you didn't mean to talk like an old-timer because you want to be a newcomer. You want to be a newcomer in terms of vocabulary, but you end up being an old-timer. And the newcomers look at you like, where did he come from? Do you ever think about going to the comet? They have no idea where you're coming from. And the nice part about it is neither do you. And you find yourself saying the strangest thing. Some guy said to me, do you live in La Mesa all your life? I said, not yet. It just pops out, And you find yourself doing things and you don't know what you're doing, but you know they make sense. And then you try to do things that make sense and you don't know what you're doing. And if you follow that, you're in the right place. And the nice part about all of this is in between you get a good yuck. You get a good laugh because absolutely no one knows what's going on. People say to me, well, I heard it mentioned several times at this convention. Well, when I'm in these rooms, I do real good. It's when I go out with the normal people. As George used to say, watch my lips. There are no normal people. There are just folks who haven't shared with you yet. In the store, people are buying things like mint-flavored dog biscuits. The normal people are buying mint-flavored dog biscuits. I want my dog to have good breath. I'll put Lavoris in the toilet. But that's what normal people are doing, There are no normal people. Out in our way a few years ago, there were drive-by shootings, and people began to react with bumper stickers, said, cover me, I'm changing lanes. Don't shoot, this is my off-ramp. Or my favorite was, keep honking, I'm reloading. But that's the way people are, There are no normal people. Anytime you think there's normal people, watch television for 24 hours. Then come and we'll have a conversation. There are no normal people. There are just people wandering around. You know, and in Alcoholics Anonymous, they show up here and they're so good because when they show up, they know everything. And all you got to do is, you know, they're so easy to confuse because you just reverse what they're saying. Again, I feel empty. Oh, good. That means you have room to grow. Oh, I do? Yeah. Oh, okay. If you were full, you'd have no room. See, so empty is good. Empty is good. Whatever you got is good. You see? Because then it will become good. You know, all you got to do is start thinking it good and it becomes good. You know, life is perception. This whole disease is perception. You know, it's like a snail sitting on the back of a turtle going, whee! You know, it's like, you know. It's not about what's going on, it's what we think is going on, you know. And alcoholics will do anything to get back and do the same thing over again that never worked. You know, we're notorious repeaters, you know. The logo for most alcoholics is, what do they do well? Start over, you know. That's what they do well. Resume is strong, they start over, you know. It's like the snail who went into the bar and he ordered a drink and the bartender picked him up and said, hey, we don't serve any snails in here, and he threw him as far as he could. And a year later, the bartender looks up and there's the snail sitting on the bar stool going, what the hell was that all about? You know, like, that's the way it is, you know. We don't care how long it takes to get back to that misery, we're going, you know. Yeah. Where are you going? Back to the misery, you know. You know, and we have this great book. It's you know, if you don't own one of these, you should get one. It's an owner's manual if you're an alcoholic. And no matter what's going on, you open it up and there's a solution in here. In fact, we even have a chapter we throw you off. There is a solution. If I'm going too fast, just say, slow down. There is a solution. Okay? Yeah. And that's the whole deal here. And it talks about this in the big book. It says what? God does not create our misery. We create our misery. And where's that misery comes from? It comes from thinking you need more than what you already have. You know, it's a simple process here. Don't let your income determine your outcome. You know, it's a real simple thing. I don't care what you're making. You have a new employer. You're fully employed. You go and do the work of that employer, and everything will come to pass that you need. And if you don't believe that, give it 10, 15, 20 years. You can't tell this stuff to people in the first year. They're still trying to figure out why they lose everything. The only time alcoholics are completely, you know, like they go to any length is when they're losing. Did you ever hear anybody say at a meeting, well, I lost a little bit. No, everybody, I lost everything. You know, we were very rigorous when we were out there losing. And you know what? I used to say that too. That's why I can relate to all this stuff. I played all the parts in the play. And I'm still playing them because I'm a work in progress. This work isn't over yet. You're just catching the second act. You know, there's a lot more to come. And that will come as I grow spiritually. And you know, when that tide is coming in, I watch the ocean today. The tide comes in, the tide goes out. The tide comes in, the tide goes out. You don't hear people say, it's going out. I'll never see it again. You know, you don't see the kids doing that. I'll be back in tomorrow, you know. No big deal. And we call that spiritual growth. Most of the problems that people think are financial, relationship-wise, economical, are soul things. And it's a natural phenomena. Our souls are expanding to encompass more and more of God's earth. And as it expands more and more to encompass more of God's worth, we have to go through these cyclical things. We have to have consolation and desolation. Consolation, desolation. What are you in? I'm in desolation. I think I'm in consolation. It doesn't matter. It's the same thing. Your soul is growing. And the thing is, in Alcoholics Anonymous is, you get to do the same thing no matter what's going on. The house is on fire. The cat's dead. The kids have run away. Good. Go to a meeting. I just hit the lottery. I got a big promotion at work. And somebody just died and left me $1 million. Good. Go to a meeting. Who cares what's going on? It doesn't matter. Unless it matters to you. And then once it matters to you, then it matters. It's an amazing thing about a problem is it's not a problem until it matters. Do you ever notice that everybody else's problems don't matter? They're not your problems. You know, I don't know why she just doesn't leave him. I don't know why he just doesn't get a job. You know, it doesn't matter because it doesn't matter. And the little kids know all this. See, well, we got to spend more time watching little kids because they know everything. We think we're raising them. No. You got to watch the kids. They know everything. You watch them out on the beach here. Tommy goes up and kisses Mary. She pushes him in the sand. He doesn't feel worthless, you know. He doesn't call his sponsor. He doesn't even have a sponsor, you know. He just goes sucks face with Mary or somebody until it catches on somewhere. You know, like, it's a simple thing. He just keeps going. You know, it's no big deal. I asked a kid one time in an elevator, why are you scratching your head? He said, because I'm the only one who knows it itches. You know? See, kids just know. And we're running around trying to figure it out. Oh, yeah, we got to figure this out. This is big. Yeah, this is big. And the nice part about it is it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. You know, in 1993... I sent my son off to on a cruise ship to do something he always wanted to do, was entertain. He had been on some daytime TV shows, and now he's going to get to go around the world, and he was going to get to sing and dance all over the world on a cruise ship. And in July of that year, 93, I got a call, and he was very sick, and they were sending him home from Norway. And when he arrived home on July 8th in LAX, he was in full-blown AIDS. And he had lost about 50 or 60 pounds. And he came to live with me. And over the next 2 months, I got to see my son die, one day at a time. Every day, something different being wrong with him. One day, no hearing. The next day, no eyesight. The next day, no brain recovery. I got a chance to watch him just deteriorate. And while I was watching that and being a part of that, I kept thinking of the alcoholic poem that we talk about at meetings, Footsteps, where they say, when there's trouble, there's one set of footprints. That's God carrying you. That was not my experience. People came out of the woodwork to help me, to be of service of me. I sponsor a lot of guys, you know. They do half the cleaning and half the cooking, but they're all single. And, you know, they don't know how to do things real good. And they were coming over, like, and trying to do my wash and trying to help me. And the bottom line was, I got to watch my son go through a horrendous experience one day at a time, and I got to be there. And I knew God had a great sense of humor because my ex-wife started coming to my home. You know? I got to meet my husband-in-law. You know? And I got to see life as life is so very important, not a day to waste. And my son had this neuropathy where he couldn't sleep and he was in pain all the time. They couldn't relieve him of this pain. And he wanted to maintain his dignity. He went from 195 pounds down to dying at about 96 pounds. And he would get on the floor and crawl to the bathroom. And I would put comforters down and pillows so that he'd have some comfort while he was doing this. And it would take him forever to do it. And he'd have to stop and nap and so forth. And as I was sitting there one time at 2 or 3 in the morning watching him do this transition from the bedroom to the bathroom, it came to me very clearly that I had crawled on the floor and lost all my dignity. And here was my son crawling on the floor to maintain his dignity. So it's not the action. It's the motivation. It's what's prompting you to do something. And I had a chance to watch his mom get back in the picture with him, and they had always stayed in touch, but it was about bringing a family together, you know, a healing. You know, the word heal and the word whole come from the same root word. If you're going to be whole, you have to go through the healing process. And I got a chance to watch him maintain a sense of humor. You know, at one time he was running a real high fever and we were packing him in ice and rubbing him in alcohol, trying to bring this fever down. And his brother was there and his mom was there and I was there. And then when he opened his eyes and the fever had broken, he looked down and there we were at the edge of the bed. And he said, "My God," he said, "that fever is unbelievable. I'm having a vision," he said, "of a nuclear family." And, you know, like, and the bottom line was, is that he had leaped frogged ahead of me spiritually. Like newcomers sometimes leapfrog ahead of you spiritually. They reach a point and they just have this quantum leap past you, because where they're going, they have to get there much faster. They can't afford the psycho drivel that we introduce into everything. They have to get there faster. And you get to watch them make these great quantum leaps where they're just boop ahead of you. And you know, in life, you get to watch alcoholics come in and do that. They come in, they have no idea what's going on, and some yahoo who doesn't know what's going on shares with him what their sponsor who didn't know what was going on. You know, and it's like a root thing, you know, quinta quinte, back to our roots. Who knows? I don't know. I thought he knew. Hey, he told me. I don't know. You know? And the deal is absolutely nobody knows. Everybody's on an oar rowing, hopefully. And the minute somebody goes topside, oh, we're in trouble. You know, as soon as someone tries to take command of the vessel, you better be prepared for ram. You know, because that's who we are. We have this great capacity to want to be humble and extraordinary at the same moment. You know? You know, we have this, you know, it was nothing, something, nothing, something, nothing. You know, why didn't you do it? Because you weren't ready. I didn't know. And we have all these whiplash of emotions. You know, I'm surprised alcoholics don't end up with more and more, you know, bad collars and disjointed necks, because we have these conversations with ourselves, particularly in a car. You can always tell when you're approaching an alcoholic car, the steam, you know. You watch the steam in the car and the guy is like, he's having a conversation with himself, and he's not liking his answers, you know? Yeah. And that's who we are. And the nice part about being here is that after a while, you get to be like this butterfly. You get to be more on the wind and in progress than trying to make progress. You just start doing the ritual that we talk about here over and over and over again. And you don't have to worry about outside stuff. You know, we worry sometimes about too many things that we have absolutely nothing to do with. You know, I don't watch the news. Now, you can watch the news, but I don't watch the news. I don't want to go to bed on the news. I want to go to bed on some yahoo who was in my house who had me laughing because he was telling me his best ideas. You know? In Alcoholics Anonymous, we don't laugh at people's problems. People say, well, you're cruel, you laughed at their problem. No, we laugh at their solutions. You know, their solutions are so unbelievably wonderful. You know, I'm having trouble with my wife and my girlfriend. I think I'm going to start dating Lucille. You know, alcoholics have houses that are on fire and we're figuring out how to get gasoline in. You know, like, hey, maybe I can take this through the kitchen. Nobody will notice, you know. And the nice part about it is that people who have been down the path are there to say, whoa, you know. And you get to be still, you know. And that's the greatest thing in the world, being still. You know, there's a psalm out of another big book, and it says, be still and know that I am God. And being still, for most alcoholics, me in particular, is the death-defying act. I want to do something. What do you want? I don't know. Let's go do it. What's your plan? Let's make it up. You know, what do you think we should do Tuesday? I don't know. Let's just do it. You know, I was always in motion. You know, I one time had an idea that I should wear my tie starched like this. You know, so people would think I was moving when I was sitting down. He's on the move again. You know, I was just having coffee or something. You know, yeah. And then for serenity, I get these ideas like, why don't we have a phoneless cord? You don't have to worry about it waking you up in the middle of the night, you know. And those are the kind of things that used to flash through my mind. It's like, if my knees bent the other way, what would chairs look like? You know, like, you know, these are things that would just kind of drift through. As Cliff said about, you know, the lights, you know. It was like, yeah. You know, my mother used to walk. My mother understood me better than any woman before or since. And I'll tell you why, because she knew who I was. And she used to say, drunk or sober, you are no day at the beach. You know, like, you know. And we had a little 12-inch television when I was growing up. You know, we had gotten one. You know, and she'd say, turn on that television, because she didn't want me sitting there thinking. You know, she'd say, turn it on. Watch something. There's nothing on. Test pattern. Watch the test pattern. No, don't sit there, you know. She used to tell me, every time you think, you put somebody, some part of the world in jeopardy. You know, like that's who I was. And when I was drinking, my mom was terrific, because she used to look at beer cans and say, I don't know what they put in here that makes you act so stupid. You know, like, and she just knew who I was, you know. And she was always able to see me just the way I was. And the woman I married was a great woman, but she had funny thinking. Very funny. She would wake you up in the middle of the night and say, there's somebody outside. And I'd say, that's where they belong, outside. You know, like, when they come inside, give me a wake and, you know, I'll ask them what the hell they're doing here, you know. But that's the way. She woke me up one night and she said, I just had a terrible dream. I said, what? She said, I dreamt you took me out into the desert and left me there. I said, well, if you let me sleep, I promise to pick you up in the morning. You know, like, that's the way, you know, like, that's the way we communicated, you know. And she would say unbelievable things like, you know, like, that's your second drink. And I'd go, woo. I'd say, honey, why don't you just forget me and finish your breakfast? But that's the way it was. You know, she had these funny conversations. I remember one time I was living in New York and the stock market took its biggest dive. And on the way home from work, I had to have a couple of shooters. And I got home and I had to have some more. And she said, what's the matter? I said, the stock market took its biggest dive. And she said, that's why you're drinking? I said, yeah. She said, we don't own any stock. You know, she had a way of doing that, you know? Like you'd be trying to rub some sticks and she'd be there with a hose, you know? You know, and she always meant well, you know, like it was always like she meant well, but she just didn't seem to know what was going on. Daters, you know, consistently. But sometimes I think overran the runway a little bit. But things would sound like good ideas to me. And it's a perceptional thing. You know, it's no matter what's going on, it's perceptional. And, you know, at one time I was court ordered to go to a psychiatrist. And it was one of those rare times in your life when you might have made a mistake. And what this guy said to me was, you know, he says, I'll never forget it because it was one of the most profound things I had heard at that time. He said, what's true in your mind is true in its consequence, even if it isn't true. And, you know, I listen to alcoholics share about things that with family members and parents, and they think about it so much, it has now become the truth. But the bottom line is, it was never the truth. You know, it's like a manipulation of reality. And that's why when we get sober, we have to bypass the thought process, and we have to get into the intuitive and the inspirational process. You know, in the big book, at least in mine, and I can only speak to it, it says at the end of the day, we constructively review the day. We don't destructively review the day. You know? Alcoholics go from road warrior to na 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 na, you know, and we, you know, that's our emotional, you know, like there's no in between. It's like 0 to 100. And, you know, we should have cars that go the other way from 100 to 0, because you know, we're usually being chased by someone, you know. And the bottom line is that in our minds it's the truth, but it was never the truth. And that's why this book talks about what? Deep down, inside each one of us, is the fundamental idea of God. It's only there that you can find it. You have to go inside. You have to bypass this thing that leads you to believe that its best interest is your best interest. Interest is not my best interest. You know, it never was. You know, and so the deal is I have to bypass. And then it says that God is what? The great reality. Once you get in touch with the great reality, there a lot of this stuff that we thought was the truth, which was really untreated alcoholism, starts to dissipate. It's not like we get rid of it. It just starts to go away. You know, you keep an alcoholic busy doing good things, and he doesn't have time to think. Next thing you know, when he gets back to it, stuff has been diminished. It's like when you leave him alone. You know? I look around this room, and I don't mean to, you know, you're a very nice-looking group. I mean, very nice-looking group. And I know there's a dance, and I won't run over, even though I got a late start. due to all the planning, you know. And I know there's a 13-step dance, so, you know, we'll get you out of here in time. As I start to wind down, I'll give you the high sign so you can pick out your target of opportunity, you know, like... Golly, she could be mine. You know? And I used to do that when I was drinking. You know, I was like Cliff and several other people who mentioned I went out to drink. I didn't stay at home. You know, I love those songs that you'd hear in the bar, like I'm just 2 six-packs away from loving you. You know, like yeah. Throw a saddle on the range, Mama. Throw a saddle on the stove, Mama. We're riding the range tonight. You know, I used to love those songs, you know. You know, I used to kiss her on the lips, but it's all over now, you know. You know, And so I know about the dances, and I know the preparation. You know, I just threw this on. I started at 4 this afternoon, but we never get to that part. So, you know, I'll let you know. I'll give you this. When I go like this, it means start to pick them out, you know. And try to get someone who doesn't have a sponsor and hasn't done the first 3 steps, you know. You can tell them you are the way. You know, I am the way. You know? We have a new group out by us. It's called ADOPS. It's getting a lot of publicity now, you know. And it's this APODS has started up, and we don't know, you know, how it's going to be. It'll probably be in Daytona soon. APODS, you know, Adult Pigeons of Dysfunctional Sponsors. But you know, but it will probably just spread across the country like everything else, you know. Somebody said to me, how does so many wackos end up in California? And I say, well, it's the topography of the country. If you look at a map, you'll see it tilts to the west. So if it's loose in another state, it kind of... And, of course, gravity down in San Diego is... We're the eight ball. And the nice part about it is that people get sober everywhere doing the same things. This is the basic text. We have recovered. I love pages 132 and 133 because it says laughter and cheerfulness are useful. You know, several people made mention of the fact this weekend, if you are laughing, you've got a good start. You know, you just don't want to be sitting around. You know, that's, ooh. An alcoholic with himself is in bad company. You know, you got to get out. You got to go meet other people. And you got to go to meetings and share what you don't have. You know? Make up a tradition, you know? I love Alcoholics. I love this book because it says, we absolutely insist on enjoying life. And then there's a sentence in here I love. It says, we know that God wants us to be happy, joyous, and free. And if you count the words in that sentence, there are 12. You know, and it's like everything around us is 12. You know, even the clock. You know, that's a time joke. You know, some of you will get it on the way home. You know, but remember, even a broken clock is right twice a day. You know. So when you're really beating up yourself, think of that, you know? And laugh, you know? You got to have some yucks. You got to have some laughter in this. Otherwise, it all looks too heavy. You know, it's like the horse that came into the bar and he ordered a drink and the bartender said, hey, why the long face? You know, you have to stop looking for what's logical. There's no logic in this world. This, you know, I have some very bright guys that I sponsor. I don't know how this happens. You know, one guy's a physicist. He knows about physicists. And he's brilliant. But boy, I'll tell you, this guy could turn a washcloth into a bathroom. You know, like he just like, you know. And he's always looking for... There's no logic in that, Ken. There's no logic in that. If this were a logical world, men would ride side saddle. You know? This is not a logical world, you know? And if you're looking for the logic, you're going to miss it. Of course, what we need to find... we already have. That's the secret here. When you find out what you're looking for, you already have. When you first get to Alcoholics Anonymous, the onus is on dealing with things that are visible. But as you stay here, what will sustain you are things you cannot see. You will be sustained in life by a power greater than yourself that operates with you. It's the only consistency in our life. If you are involved with any human being, I can tell you three things about that situation. That human being will die, will go away, or will change. There is no permanency in human beings. And that's why the relationship that alcoholics are looking for, and in many cases find, and it changes their whole life, is right here in this book. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. We're looking outside for what's inside. We're looking for something that is lost that we already have. We're spending a lot of time running around when we could be standing still. There's no place to go. There's nothing to do. I picked that up watching, Kung Fu on TV years ago. When the master looked at him and says, "Why are you rushing, grasshopper? You are already here." I knew that was significant. And I knew it was significant, too, that they had those dragons on their arms. Because, see, if he wanted what they had, he was going to have to do what they did. They didn't say, "You have to go and burn your arms and put these dragons on there." He said, "I want what you have." They go... "Want to take another peek?" That's why we change the newcomer around. You just got to say things differently, and he immediately thinks it's different. Like you say to him, "If you want what we have, then you have to do what we did." "I can't do that." "Okay. If you don't want what you have, you have to stop doing what you're doing." "Oh, yeah, yeah. Thank you, grasshopper. No, I see. If you see, you're missing it." They tell a great story about Buddha where, to show you the impermanence of life, Buddha was going through a town, and one day they used to wait in line to get up to visit with Buddha and just touch him. And this guy got up to him and he slapped his face. And Buddha said to him, "Is that all you have to say?" And about 2 years later, Buddha was in the same town, the same guy, worked his way up, and when he got up, he tried to make an amends, and he said, "When you were here 2 years ago, I slapped your face, and I need to make an amends." He might have been in a program, I don't know. But Buddha said to him, "Your amends are not necessary, because the face you slapped on me no longer exists. And it's quite obvious that the man who slapped that face no longer exists." See, this is not about standing still. This is about being still. On the outside today, my sponsor told me when I got here, he said, "Ken, you're a terrorist. You were born to be a terrorist. You have a mind of a terrorist." It's like, and I did, too. I did. When I wanted to scare somebody, I used to put my eyebrows up there real high. I had this look, And they'd say, I walked into a bar and they'd say, like, "Let the games commence." He's here, Because I was always capable of taking any serenity that existed and disturbing it. That was my cause in life. I'd say, "Whoo, that looks awfully peaceful over there," And I would immediately go to work on it. And I was a maniac outside, and I was a maniac inside. And my sponsor says, you're a wild man, but if you take these steps with me and stay in this program, you will become a disciplined wild man. You will be wild on the outside, but on the inside, you will sustain a tranquility that will take you to places you never knew existed. And he was absolutely right. I held the hand of my son, and my wife held the other hand when our son died. And my son, we took him off the medication because it wasn't doing any good anyway. And he had about 45 minutes where he talked to us. He came out of this coma, and he thanked us for being his parents, and he thanked us for being there and being supportive. And he winked at me, And he said, I'm okay with this, Dad. You have to be okay with it. He went right by me. He was already where he had to be. And I couldn't catch up no matter how fast I ran. But today, I understand exactly what took place. He was reaffirming in me what I verbalized and somehow in all of this forgot. And it's so easy to forget because we think that this is ours. You know, I spent a good part of my life trying to get all my ducks in a row. And when my son died, I could see clearly they were never my ducks. They were only on loan. And they were God's ducks all along. And when he wanted to do something with them, that was his deal. And my deal was to say, your will be done. And in saying your will be done, I got to go from the desolation to the consolation. I got to grow spiritually. You can't take anything away from me today because I don't have anything. Anything you take from me, you're just borrowing because I have it on loan. It's not mine. And I got that by doing a few bozo steps and going to a few bozo meetings and hanging out with a lot of people who don't know Jack, you know? And the people that scare me are those who know. They're the ones who scare me, not the guys who, I don't have a clue, you know. They're not the guys who scare me. It's the people who are very definitive about this, and they know what's right for me and for everybody else. They're the folks who scare me, not the guys who I hang out with. You know, they can't find the rain in the rain. And that's why they're so peaceful, you know. Everybody's running for umbrellas. The guys I hang out with, And none of us are dysfunctional. We just don't know anything. You know, I remember watching the old Scrooge at Christmas time. I have that movie on video now. The one with Alastair Sims, and I play that over and over again for newcomers because it's the AA story. He is a miserable, beat-up, contemptible human being, and he goes to bed, and he gets to see what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now. And he gets it all in one night, which really ticks me off. And he wakes in the morning, and he's had these spiritual visits, and he's never the same again. And in the version I have, he sings my favorite song, which is, I don't know anything. I never did know anything. But now I know I don't know anything. What a great song. You know, you start telling people you don't know anything, they stop asking you. You know? It's a wonderful phenomena. You know, don't ask him. He doesn't know anything, you know. And you just keep, I don't know, you know. After a while, people just stop asking you big questions. And you get to carry this out into all areas of your life. You know, you get to practice this everywhere. I'm in the store and I see things and I see people who are having a lot of tension in their lives. You know, in California, we had digital communication on the freeway long before it became fashionable, you know. But the deal is that you get to see things. I was in the supermarket, and the guy said to me very peacefully and serenely, I'll take you next, sir, over here. Just then, I saw a woman with a cart, you know. She's bearing down on me. She has this look like the road warrior, you know, like the Ayatollah of rock and roller, you know. Well, I had a, you know, intuitive flash, because it's one of the promises. And I stepped back, and I said, come on, come on, you know. It's in here, you're next, yay. You know, come on, honey, get in there. And she kind of looks, and she buzzes in there. And, of course, she, you know, she's looking at me, and she's, and I just bought her a little sanity. And, of course, she paid with a check. And the clerk said to her, "What's your phone number?" I said, "Don't give it to him. He won't call you anyway." You know, like, and, you know, she started to laugh. And once she started to laugh, it was okay. It's an amazing thing. When you see someone, they don't want to laugh. Everybody wants to laugh. Laughing is the most natural gift we have. It's the way we get to God when we don't know meditation. Because it's the only thing that shuts this off. You cannot laugh and think at the same time. So when you're laughing, it's like, you know, if there were a song in AA, it would be, "I am always on my mind. I am, you know." This is, and what this does is it buys you a little peace, a little serenity, a gap. And that's what meditation is. It's a gap between this thought and that thought. And you find out, hey, there's space in between these things. You know, this is not rapid fire. You know, it's a thought, it's a thought, it's a thought, it's a thought. No thought. And you get to understand things that you never knew existed. You get to understand the fullness of nothing. You get to know the fullness of, what do you got? Nothing. But I'm full of it. And you know, when I got here, my sobriety date is July 5th of 70. And when my mom said that was very appropriate, you did everything on a 5th. And... But when I got here, I was one of those, you know, guys who say things like, "I lost everything, and I was left with nothing. And if I can hang on for about 6 weeks, I'll have 27 years here. And I can tell you this, the everything that I lost has turned out to be nothing. And the nothing that I was left with has turned out to be everything." You know? And life is in session as long as it's in session. And you have to be let go from this place. You need to go forth and multiply. Some of you can go right to the 12th floor, you know, like. But the deal is that, you know, don't get caught up in yourself. You know, there's a story in the big book in the second edition, and it says there are only two sins in Alcoholics Anonymous and in life, and that is the first is to interfere in the growth of another human being. And the second is to interfere in the growth, your own growth. You know, get out of your way. Stop looking for something that's not to be found. Step forth today with the idea that this is it. I'm going to do this moment. I'm going to make it the most precious moment there is for me. And I'm going to squeeze everything out of it. So that if my ticket gets punched tonight, nobody owes me anything. I will have had the ride. Don't miss the ride. You know, we had the San Diego Roundup. It's Easter weekend. And this past year, I got to see something. And the only reason I'll share the story with you is because two out of the three of the principals are here. And Cliff and Pat's daughter, Jan, sang Amazing Grace at the end of that convention with this young man. I think his name is Lamar. And where I was sitting, I could see Pat. Cliff was up on the dais because I think he was involved in introducing the speaker. And Jan was in front of the microphone singing. And what I saw was the AA triangle. Pat was the unity, Jan was the service, and Cliff was the recovery. And Cliff was crying, but it wasn't sad, it was joyful. A family that, by their own admission in two stories you heard this weekend, had been kind of exploded and imploded, was now in the healing process. And they were in the healing process because they had learned the secret of life. And that is to let go. Loving someone and letting them go is the same thing. If you love someone, you have to be ready any time to let them go. And if you can't let them go, then please don't call it love. It's something else.
It's possession or whatever, but it's not love. Because love is having so much concern and interest for that person that you want them to do whatever they need to do or whatever God has them doing at that time. And getting out of their way. This is a real great thing. This is a real great thing. I want to thank you for letting me come here tonight. I want to thank you for letting me be part of this. Please take real good care of one another, because we're only on loan. God bless you. Thank you.